Hey, welcome, welcome,
welcome,
welcome to the Marshaverse. This is a place in the rest of the universe where I come to make shit make sense.
From the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good morning. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. It's midnight and I'm Marsha. And we're going to Marshaverse with a special guest tonight. Karima Westbrook is going to be here with us. And it's the first time we're meeting, so I am really looking forward to that. And you know, we'd like to get together and just hang out and chill, because chill is the goal always. We are way too stressed. We are always going, got something to do and all that kind of stuff. So when you're in this mode, in this time of day and night, where we're in between yesterday and tomorrow, but it's still today, this is a good time to just hang out and chill. And we thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Welcome. Feel free to join me in my my weekly ritual that I have here on the webcast, where I have a little cannabis and cognac, because old people smoke a lot of weed. Y'all don't know that. We're boomers, and old people, we've been smoking it for a long time, and we still like to relax. And it beats taking a bunch of pills and all that kind of stuff, and melatonin, this and this and that. And just hit your little vape and go to sleep. So, you know, on the internet, one of my favorite videos is the lady who says the doctors better not take her weed. Watch her.
If they say I gotta stop smoking weed, I'm getting the fuck out of here right now.
Mama, you here for your knee.
I don't care.
Your knee hurts.
I know, but I just get the hell out of here. That's all. I don't want my weed taken away from me.
Okay, they ain't gonna take your weed away.
They could take my leg.
Okay. Mama say you could take her leg, but you can't take her weed. And I feel that. I really do feel that. And tonight, we have an AMA cart. This is AMA. And I don't know what that stands for, but I'm a smoker. This is a Shiv. It's a by Hamilton. I just like that. So let's turn that on and have a little hit. Well, alrighty then. That's done. And now we have I'm already blitzed. We have our cognac. And we're going to have, I think this is Diddy's brand. No, that's not Diddy's brand. This is 50 Cent's brand, Branson. And we're having this in honor of 50 and Diddy's feud. The hell do I know about that? So we're making what I like to call an upper ghetto, because I am upper ghetto. We take a little cognac. We pour it into a little liqueur. We have some Mozart chocolate and some Bailey's salted caramel liqueur in there. And now we have a little Branson and a little coffee. And that's about as upper ghetto as you could get. If you're joining me, join me now. Here's to you. Here's to us. Here's to Tamron. I like free stuff, and I like to use it. Whoa. That was nice. That's a little 1-2 punch. Okay, so now I want to talk about then my comediosophy segment. This is a segment where I philosophize about comedy and things related to comedy material and subjects. I've been noticing that, you know, I spend a lot of time online. I love social media. I love just visiting people's lives. You know, it's like living in a big apartment building and you can just see in everybody's window. And so you notice trends, you notice, you know, all kinds of things when you have that kind of access. And one of the things that's that bothers me is that across social media, there seems to be this war on old people. And it's not just individual old people. It's like we're all too old and we should be thrown out with the trash. And we have no more value because we're old. And we use that even in politics. Joe Biden, unfortunately, diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer. And people are taking it this opportunity to just pile on about he's been too old to be president. He's too, oh, he was sick for years. And it doesn't have to be any of that. And none of it stopped his expertise and you know, lifelong commitment to politics. He still managed to function pretty well. And then we have another guy who's damn near as old, and he's been stupid since I've been aware of him. So yeah, it doesn't really have a lot to do with age, but we somehow conveniently blame people's age for their character and their accomplishments and all kind of stuff. And it's reminiscent of when I was younger. You know, back in the 60s, there was a really declared war on anybody over 30. According to young people in the 60s, anybody over 30 deserved to die. They were just in the way. And young people have contributed quite a lot to everything. If we look at all of the movements of the 60s and 70s, they were all led by young people. Even the 50s, if you think about the Montgomery bus boycott, I think Martin Luther King was about 24, 25 years old. The Panthers were college students, the hippies and all of the people demanding change, the Vietnam vets. When you saw Vietnam vets or young men inducted into the military, these were babies. These kids were 17, 18, 19 years old. And so a lot of the social change that we experienced in the 60s and 70s came from very young people. And they have value. They have a passion. And what I love about the young people nowadays that I encounter online and that I gravitate to, they're so passionate and they're so strong that they're willing to be vulnerable. They're willing to put their real raw emotions out for the world to do as they will. And we know sometimes the world can be pretty fucking brutal. But these young people have a sense of self and they are passionate about what they believe in and they commit, and I am 150% behind them. But I think they do would do a disservice if they throw grandma under the bus. You know, gramps and grandma have a lot to offer. We might not have the energy to get really involved, but we do what we can. But we also have, you know, experience. And so we don't have to be smarter than you to know more than you. And we don't have to be geniuses to be a wealth of information and context for the facts and factoids and disinformation and misinformation and whatever you get coming at you through your screen. You know, you have old people in your life for a reason that you can go to and say, Auntie, Grandma, Papa, what does this mean? What is this like? Have you ever experienced anything like that? And then take that experience and apply it to what you see. One of my mentors said the best thing about experience, he said two things. One, the best thing about experience is you don't have to take it. And two, if you do take it, it doesn't have to be your experience for you to gain from it. So keep that in mind. Everybody has something to offer, you know, and put on the table. So, you know, you might be surprised at the things your granny might say. Like, I've been fortunate enough in my career to have seen a lot of change happen. And I have been on two shows that feature that have featured me in LGBTQ. I am PDWY segments and episodes. And one, 911, I got to apologize to my TV daughter, who I love, to Hen, Aisha. I was missing Aisha Hines. And I got to apologize to her and Tracy Toms for not supporting them in the beginning of their relationship. Let me take a look at that.
You're not getting married, Ma?
Clive and I can do it another time.
I have 4 dozen deviled eggs in the fridge. There will be a wedding today.
There will. Just not mine.
Ma.
Henrietta, let me say this. I'm sorry I didn't come to your wedding. I had my reasons, my excuses. I didn't understand. I wasn't ready. I needed more time to catch up with the way the world was changing. But the truth is, honey, I was just wrong.
It's okay, Tony.
No, it isn't. I don't know how you found it in your heart to forgive me, but I'm grateful you did. We all lost something that day. I think today may be our chance to get it back. That was nice. I liked that moment. But then there was another moment that I got to perform in that, again, highlights the progress that we have made. And that was on Night Court when Roz got married. And, you know, it's nice to be part of moving things forward and to be able to say in your career that that you had, you know, a little part in making people being themselves acceptable. Take a look at Roz's wedding.
The wedding is now in session.
Welcome, everyone, to Roz and Loretta, take 2. I know this wasn't your first choice of venue.
Or second. We almost converted to get a synagogue on Long Island.
But I think this place is very special. My dad always said 1 million stories came in through these courtroom doors. And I personally think the best kind is a love story. Roz and Loretta, we are so incredibly lucky to be witnessing the official beginning of your love story here tonight.
Moving along, Stone. The DJ's on the clock.
By the power vested in me by the state of New York, I sentence you to eternity together. $50 fine and time served. Oh, sorry, reflex.
I don't know why I'm crying. I didn't even know these people.
Yeah. And my real wife was there, and she was on the Tamron Hall show with me. I like having her with me. I found lately that that's pretty much a lesbian thing. Lesbians like, you know, being up under each other, even though we're people. So some lesbians probably can't stand being in the same room with each other unless they have to be. And that's fine for them. But I like having my wife around. And she doesn't like the light, limelight at all. But it's nice when I can drag her into an opportunity to let the world see what I see. And so I'm happy to show her off whenever I can. So if I have rambled enough, or I really haven't, because I have another thing I want to talk about, old people, that I think we need to highlight. You know, young people don't like to think about old people getting busy. You know, there's a whole lot of, I call them young people yuck videos, where they just look at yuck, and we don't want to see old people, you know, mating. And I have to tell you, you know, if you have that kind of mindset, your grandmother's a freak.
People have weird ideas. Young people have these weird ideas about old folks. It's like, for some reason, young people think that there's some kind of magic age where you just stop wanting to have sex. I don't know how old that is. But I ain't there yet. It's like they have this real weird idea, like when we start getting Social Security, our coochies dry up. They don't go bad, you know. It's like, oh, this is a little too old. Got to throw that out. No, it's fine. Still juicy.
You don't stop being freaky. You're freaky. You don't stop being freaky just because you have a birthday. You know, you stop being able to do all the things you think about because sometimes your back won't cooperate. But you still have life. And life for adults includes physical attraction and expressions of affection. And it's really sad when we can, it's more acceptable to publicly express how much you dislike or even hate something or someone. That's okay. If you, I hate those rabbits, you get all kind of engagement and back and forth. But if you say, I love people, or I love being in love, you get some engagement, but you get other people telling you how that's weak and you're vulnerable and all that kind of stuff. And so I, if I have any mission, is to make love and being nice and being human okay. And you know, yeah, Granny's a freak. And I hope that you will have healthy relationships throughout your life, whatever stage of adult life you are. So now I have rambled long enough. I think that's a Western movie song. Doo-doo-doo-doo. I have rambled. What am I playing? I can't. Here, I would like to introduce my next guest, a young lady I've never met. I'm so looking forward to her. She's beautiful. She's got a resume as long as me. And she's a homegirl from Chicago. So I just can't wait to talk to her about you know, hometown. So please welcome my guest this evening, Karima Westbrook. Hi, honey. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for staying up late.
Same. Pleasure to meet you, too. Well, I got my coffee over here.
Okay. Well, I got a little coffee, a little anti-coffee. Are you usually up late?
Actually, I am. I am. My sleeping pattern has been off lately. So technically, it's not that hard, but I didn't get a whole lot of rest today. So I just had a little coffee.
Coffee down.
Yeah.
So you're from Chicago.
Yes, ma'am.
And I see that it's the West Side.
The West Side. Yeah, me and Skills, we had a little Harold's Uncle Remus debate earlier today.
Yeah, well, see, I'm from the South Side. Yes. And I don't know if it's the same on the West Side, but, you know, there are snobs on the South Side and snobs on the North Side. I mean, on the West Side, that the two don't mix. Spend a lot of time going all over the city, or did you kind of stay in the West Side?
I stayed on the West Side for primarily most of my life. We were on the West Side. Now, since I live in California, my mom and my sister, they now live on the South Side. So,
okay. Yeah.
But all my life, I was on the West Side.
Where? How far west?
West suburbs, actually. Maywood.
Okay, I know Maywood. But it's a lot of... Maywood had been traditionally Black throughout my life.
Yeah.
Did it change? Has it gentrified?
You know what? I haven't been back that way since now everybody lives out south, like far south, like South Holland.
Yeah.
That's where my mom is at now in that area. So, but I haven't been back out there, not back out west towards Maywood. So I'm not for sure. Possibly. I know a lot of changes have taken place, you know, since I moved to California, which has been it's been 25 years now. It's been a minute. But
it's amazing to have experienced all of those changes and patterns, and because a lot of those places you mentioned, Black people weren't allowed in. There were very clear demarcations of where the inner city, the chocolate city, you know, was. And then they built the freeways around it. And so you had pretty much a Black and somewhat multicultural inner city and white suburbs. And then the city planners and the people, they got tired of the commutes and the, you know, being so far away. So they started drifting and exchanging them, the Black people now in the suburbs that they used to not be allowed in, and the white people are in the areas that used to be undesirable. And it's just interesting to watch that happen and to think that it might be organic and not planned and designed. So anyway, that's just me.
But you know what? They also, they tore down a lot of the housing projects too. So they really kind of pushed people out from like closer to downtown area, like a Cabrini Green, like a lot of things they tore down. So they kind of pushed people out to where they could find like affordable housing. And then a lot of that was started to get set up like out in the suburbs. So people.
Oh, you mentioned Cabrini Green. Do you know Eric Monte or know of Eric Monte?
Mm-mm.
Eric Monte created Good Times.
And he's from Chicago?
He's from Cabrini Green. And he created that in Cooley High and a lot of other. Cooley High was adapted into What's Happening, the sitcom. So I was just wondering if that was, if his contribution was known in his hometown. You know, it just seems that he's been kind of erased a little bit.
I had no idea. Good to know.
Yep, there's a lot of stuff like that. Now, when you started, and I read you said that Whoopi was an inspiration.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Whoopi Goldberg was a huge inspiration for me growing up because she was a leading lady. She looked like me in regards to black, dark skin, sister, natural hair. And I feel like when I was growing up watching movies, she was like the prominent face from like Color Purple, Fatal Beauty, Burglar, Jumpin' Jack Flash. I loved all those movies, you know, and she was funny. And I think, you know, as a kid, I didn't put two and two together that, oh, I could actually do this as a career. I think I was just more mesmerized within the story. And even when I was just doing plays, I just didn't know anybody that was working professionally in the field. So I never connected the dots of like, you can actually do this for a living until I got older. But I just think that she was a huge source of entertainment. Color Purple is one of my favorite movies growing up. And I just love the fact that she looked like me or people that I saw every day, you know? So that was inspiring just to see that. And she was just good, you know?
Yes, indeed. Did you go back and see her early work, like her Broadway show?
I did see, I forget which stand-up show I saw of hers. I read her autobiography too, which was very interesting because you just never know what people have gone through, you know, on their journey. So that was really inspiring. But I did see one of her her stand-up shows. I just forget the name of it. It escapes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you were in Badass.
Yes.
That's another very interesting historical person.
Yes.
Melvin Van Peebles. Mm-hmm. I first became aware of him as a director long before Sweetback. Yeah. He was directing for Black shows. Bill Cosby's first sitcom. I first noticed him because he did this episode that was different than the rest. There were a lot of quick cuts and flashbacks and just different themes that I hadn't seen in other shows.
Yeah.
And so when his name came up again with Sweetback, which was revolutionary, but it was an interesting movie.
Yeah.
What did you know about the Blaxploitation era?
I didn't know a whole lot until I did the film. And to learn how he was like a pioneer in regards to actually spearheading that whole era, giving the studios confidence of like, oh, there's something here. There's something to these movies. Let's make more. And then how it exploded and then how it also quickly kind of went away after a while, you know, and people were like, okay, you know, what happened? But yeah, I wasn't exposed to that world until, I did do Badass, and then I just was researching the time and, you know, just saw how Melvin really played a pivotal part in spearheading more movies being made with Black actors.
And how did you transition into the business? What was the time like and the experience for you?
You know, I moved to LA. I had a lot of faith. You know, I was always been very goal-oriented. So I wrote out my goals. Once I knew it was something that I could pursue seriously as a career acting, I just began to educate myself. I applied for the Academy of Dramatic Arts. And at the time it was in Pasadena, California. I got accepted into that, but it was like a conservatory. So I couldn't audition, I couldn't do anything. So after I finished the program, I moved back to Chicago, but I knew I wanted to get back to LA. So I pretty much wrote out my plan and just kept moving forward in the best way I knew how. I was doing indie films, chilling circuit plays. And then there was a movie, a studio film that came to Chicago. It was called Save the Last Dance. And I crashed that audition and I ended up getting a role in it. And that movie, I made enough money to officially move back to LA. So I kind of feel like for my journey, my faith was very strong. I knew that it was possible. I didn't know how it was all going to happen, but you know, I wrote out my goals. I moved forward in the best way that I knew how. And I just felt like I was being led, like the path was presenting itself. And so I knew I wanted to get back to LA. I didn't know how. I worked the best way I could. And then that door opened for Save the Last Dance, and I made enough money, and then I moved back to LA. And I didn't know anybody in LA. I had two friends that were from Chicago. They had moved there before me, and they were like aspiring actresses. They didn't know anybody either. And before I moved to LA, I used to write people. Like it was a cat, remember Shimin Bernard, casting director. I used to all these shows I wanted to be on. I had no idea what I was doing, but again, I was just trying to think outside the box and do whatever my spirit was leading me to do, rather it was I got results or not. And Soul Food, the TV series, was on, and I remember I called Edmonds Entertainment, and there was a receptionist, this guy who ended up being very helpful to me on my journey before I moved to LA. Actually, when I moved to LA, he helped me find my first place, him and his wife. So I just feel like that was kind of how my start. I felt like, you know, it's like faith without works is dead. So I had my goals, I prayed about it. I was in action, and the people that was put on their heart to help me, that things just begin to show up, begin to happen to lead.
But what was the first thing you made happen? What was the first thing you did that said, I'm going to give this a shot?
What was the first thing? I think, well, after military school, because I did go to military school, I was in
Chicago junior public military school, or
no, it was a school called Lincoln's Challenge. And it was a school for like badass kids, basically kids who needed discipline. So my mom thought I needed discipline. And so she sent me to this military school. After the military school, I went to a junior college, and I was there, and I was just like, I want to get back to like entertainment and acting, because I was doing plays at school. And so I think my part in what I did was pretty much go for it. You know, I researched what was like the best schools. I learned about the Academy of Dramatic Arts. They were traveling around to each state auditioning people. And when they came to Chicago audition, I got accepted. And that was like the first step. When I moved to LA back then, you know, we had the headshots and resumes that you mail to people and stuff like that. I was very proactive. I was like mailing letters and headshots to everybody. And someone called me in. Actually, it was called Big Ticket Television, and they cast like Moesha and all those shows. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no experience with like sides material.
And nobody knows what they're doing.
They called me in. They were like, can you read this material? You know, it was a comedy, but I came in all dramatic. You know, I had prepared, and they were like, do you know the difference between like comedy and drama, how it's done on a script? I was like, no. They were like, this is a comedy. I was like, oh, I did it again. They were like, you don't have an agent? I said, no. They were like, we're going to make some phone calls. So that's how I got my first agent. So I feel like I was always been very proactive. And I feel like in my proactiveness, people were showing up or just on my path to kind of help me along. And that came out of me being proactive.
But that's interesting you say that. I'm sure about 30 years before that, I had left my home to strike out on my own in Los Angeles, and I knew I wasn't going back to Chicago. I it never crossed my mind to quit. And so after I did the Richard Pryor show, I got cast on a ensemble show called That Thing on ABC. And they asked me if I would do it. I said yes, but I didn't have an agent. So I called ICM and told them I had a job and I didn't have an agent, and could they help me? And they said, what? I said, I have a job. And they said, on TV? I said, yes. And they said, you have a job on TV, you don't have an agent. I said, yes. He said, hold on. And they sent me back through, you know, lots of, you have a job and you don't have an agent? Finally, guy came on the phone and said, hey, I'll be your agent. And he was my, that's how I got my first agent on from ICM. So there's something to be said about taking those chances and believing that what can it hurt? You know, it's not like I'm saying, hey, I'm the answer to everybody's dreams. I'm just saying, well, they're going to hire somebody. What can it hurt for them to look at me?
Exactly.
So when you started working and and started being a full-time actress, what was that moment? When did you know that you were making it?
Well, when I first moved to LA, I did start working pretty quick. Like, people were like, give it 3 years to find an agent, give it, you know, all this time. And I was, you know, ready for whatever, but I booked my first, I think my first job was City of Angels. And I booked that probably like 6 months after moving here. And I had booked a bunch of commercials before then. The point where I kind of felt like, I don't think I've ever felt like I made it, right? Because I feel like the jobs come and then they're done. So even with being on All American, which I was on that show for the past, for 6 seasons, I still never felt like I made it. I knew the job was going to come to an end at some point. I was very thankful that I wasn't on a struggle bus, you know what I mean, anymore. But I don't think I ever felt like I made it. Because I, looking at this business, realistically, I feel like a job is a job and it's gonna start and it's going to end at some point. So I feel like I've always kind of kept things in perspective in that regards, where it's just like, I'm thankful to be working on this, but, you know, I also know at some point it's going to come to an end, and not carrying that like heavy energy, like, oh my God, it's very interesting. I watch other people in the industry, like people I look up to or admire, and just looking at their journeys of how they were really working at one point and then we haven't heard from them in years. Or just how people could love you one moment and completely appear to hate you in the next. So I feel like it has helped me, has grounded me in a way where I try to stay pretty balanced in regards to how I look at the industry and also my place in it. And so I've never felt like I've made it. I've always felt like, I think All American was the biggest job where I felt like I was thankful that I didn't have to struggle as much. That's how, as far as it went, I never went like, I made it. Now I'm just kind of like, I can breathe.
Well, you know the five stages of show business, right? Who's Marsha Warfield? Get me Marsha Warfield. Get me somebody like Marsha Warfield. Give me a young Marsha Warfield. Who's Marsha Warfield? So it don't matter who we are. What's the future? What's the future for you right now?
I'm creating, you know. I started directing.
Like, I saw that.
Yeah, back in 2021. So I'm on that track of like continuing to learn. I just produced a web series I'm really excited about. I directed 3 of those episodes. Some people that I met in a DGA mentorship program, they directed the other 3. So I'm just learning more skills where I could continue to work. I directing was never really on my radar, but when I had the opportunity to do it, I really do like it, you know? So I've just decided to educate myself more in there. So I'm just working to position myself where I can continue to work as an actor, but also I'm creating my own opportunities, also creating work for other people. And I feel like the landscape has changed so much. The industry has changed so much. It's like the Wild Wild West, where you really don't know what's gonna work or not gonna work, but the doors are open for you to legitimately create something and keep it going and having someone else pay for it to keep it going. So I'm working to do that, you know?
Yes, I understand that. And I understand it in the context of the continuation of what we know as the chitlin circuit, where you make a way out of no way, you build a separate culture. If the other culture won't accept you, you find a way to get from the blues to hip hop. It's a continuum that's been going on since the first boat landed, and that progress, that reality is not always appreciated, that we're just stepping onto a road that's already been laid and taking it a step further. And we're not building things out of, you know, whole cloth or begging people to let us in their house. We have always had this foundation, and it will sustain you throughout your dreams. And I always say, your dreams are your blueprint for your life. Mm-hmm. And as long as you follow those, you're good. They come from another place. So I'm going to ask you to stay here for a minute while my sons, my two sons, come out and fan all over you, because, you know, that's what they do. But yeah. I want you to meet my oldest son, the one who looks just like me. We're going to see a little bit of his opinions first.
Okay.
I'm watching a movie. Don't talk during the movie. That's a standard rule in a movie theater, but it also should apply when you're at home. I'm watching a movie. You're watching a movie. Let's not talk. Let's wait. Let's wait until maybe a scene break, or maybe when somebody has to go to the bathroom, which always is at the most inconvenient time. Have you ever noticed that? Right when the plot starts to twist, somebody has to go wash a dish or go pee or something like that. It's like, I'm busy right now. I'm watching this movie. I want to know if Laverne killed Shirley. Give me a break. Which is also an old TV show, but anyway. And I use this as punishment. Yes, okay, you're going to talk during the show that we're watching? Fine, I'm going to pause it. Pause. Yes, everybody's looking at you now. What do you want to say? What is it that you have to say that is so important right in the middle of this TV show that we're watching or movie? It's got to be important. Don't talk. Don't talk during the movie.
Okay, now you're going to meet the man himself. Will you please say hello to my oldest son, Stephen Roberts? Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Mom.
Hi,
Karima.
How are you?
I'm good. So excited to have you on the show. It's really, it's great. And I'm so glad you're from Chicago.
Like that since we had ice cream for dinner. you are excited.
I'm always excited to see these brilliant people. Karima, writer, director, actor, producer, painter?
Oh, yeah. Wow. You know, I haven't painted in a long time, but I did paint quite a bit years ago. And interesting story around the painting, right? I had took a class. I was taking a class at my church at the time. I was going to this church called Agape. And part of the homework or an assignment was to find a craft for self-expression, right? And so they had a couple options, poetry and all this painting. Someone tried painting. You know, I haven't painted, you know, and I did it and I loved it. It was such a great release. So every day, I mean, I bought all this paint. There was a warehouse in the valley that sold these huge easels for like dirt cheap. I bought all these easels. And so every day I'm waking up, I'm painting. I'm going to the store, paint on my hand. I'm feeling like I'm a Picasso or something. And I'm just like painting, right? It's feeling great, all the stuff. And I have all this work that's piled up. A friend comes to visit and she says, hey, like who did? I had one of the paintings on the wall. She said, who painted that? I said, I did this. She said, no way. I said, I did. She said, can I buy it? And I'm like, no. And I was just like, she's looking at all my pieces. She said, oh my God, you should sell some of this. I'm like, really? She said, yeah.
So she's like, I can help you. A guy used to date, he was a painter. I can help you put together your first show. I'm like, oh my God, that's great. I put together the first show. I get, so I had it, like people were bidding. I sold like 12 pieces, right? I'm like, oh my God, this is it, you know? So I'm like, I'm going to get more canvases. I was using styrofoam, started doing all this stuff with like styrofoam. And as soon as I tried to paint for money, nothing came out. I was like, I had all these canvases. I was ready. I was like, I'm gonna set up at the farmer's market. I had my whole plan. You know, like, I can't believe this. This is my way. This is what I'm gonna make money while pursuing acting. And as soon as I tried to, I couldn't, nothing was coming to mind. Before, when it was just like authentically, just naturally flowing through me, you know, I was reading the word and I was just every day, it was just, and now I'm finding myself trying to come up with stuff and it just was never the same. And it was one of those things where, interesting enough, I never went back to it.
It's still there. That muse will wake up one day and you will just start. You won't think, you'll just start. Yeah. Just like you just started then, and it will find its way back. You know, that's life. Life interferes with what we're doing. But before my youngest son starts biting through the screen, because he's my problem child, and I love him dearly, but he gets a little mad at me sometimes. But I'm going to introduce him first through some video where you get to know him.
What up, famo? What up, famo? Skills on the streets. Here's Monday morning, doing my laundry run this early morning. And as I put my clothes in the washer and dryer, well, I put them in the dryer because they already washed. I went over there to the Albertsons over there to do my little grocery run. And a gentleman approaches me before I go in and say, hey, before you go in there, if you want to purchase something, I got this card that can help you out. So, needless to say, I was able to get a few more groceries than I was expecting to get. Thank you. Appreciate you.
I don't know what he's doing in these videos, so I'm just going to assume he's doing what he does. Skills. He's froze. There you go.
About time.
Wait a minute. I didn't introduce you yet. Go back.
Oh.
So, here is my baby boy. Please say hello to Skills Hudson.
Hello. Hey, Karima.
Hi, Skills.
Suave Skills.
Hey. Thank y'all for finally bringing me in.
Yeah, well, we knew you had something to say, so have at it, baby boy.
Well, y'all don't say it at all. It was a great interview. I'm glad you was on the show. When I want to tell you, first of all, I love All American, and you know what I'm saying, from the first, besides the last season. I haven't watched the last season.
Oh, I thought you were upset. Boy, I hated that one.
No, I hated the last season. Y'all shouldn't have did that one. No, I haven't watched the last season. But just to hear your story and from the grassroots, and also it touched my heart that you, like me, you went to a behavioral school. You know what I'm saying? You had a behavior problem like me. That's good to know. You know what I'm saying? Because I ended up, I graduated from Pace High School. I don't know if you heard of that school.
Yeah.
It was out of Robbins. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My graduating class was 8. So I know to see where we don't came. Look at us now.
You still problem child.
Still problem child. You
found a way to handle it and make it work for you. Y'all got any questions before we let this lovely lady go to bed?
Well, I have another question. It's a little detailed, but so you went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. What was their approach to acting? Did you adopt it, and did it change later for you?
Their approach, they primarily work from like Uta Hagen's teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time really introduced to any specific technique. And I feel like it has changed for me in a way where there's a lot of techniques, right? And I had this idea with acting that because it is a craft, but I felt like I had to learn all these things and everything that I learned, I needed to apply. So later in my journey, I started studying like method acting, right? And that was like completely different than Uta Hagen. And all these different techniques actually confused me because I was under the assumption that I needed to use them all in order to be a great actor, but it really got me in my head. So I wasn't, it was harder for me to be it because I had was intellectualizing everything. I had did all this work and it was more in my head. So I've definitely grown from that process, or the process has changed for me. I've gone back to the imagination, you know, starting from the foundation of imagination and using tools as I need them, and not so much feeling like, you know, with everything I do, if I'm auditioning for a drama and, you know, the scene is I'm outside sitting in the sun, maybe I don't have to do a recall of me like in the sauna and I'm hot, you know, I don't have to, you know, apply all that to the audition, but I was like literally doing that. So my approach has changed, you know, over the years. A lot of the tools are relative, but I use them as I need them. But overall, I think my foundation is working from the imagination and concentrating or focusing or living in the world where it becomes more real to me versus pulling from, you know, my past and all of these things. So that's much more of how we were kids, right? It was just imagination. The kids aren't thinking about, oh, when my parents died and all of that to make me cry. So,
I'm a cowboy. You're a doctor. Hey, you're going to fall. I mean,
right. They don't even and think I'm 100% of it. Committed to it, right? Yes. So
I don't know who the actor was, but somebody, they asked him how he managed to convey so much emotion on screen, on the big screen, without really doing much. He said, you have to think about something. You don't have to think about what you're doing, but you have to think about something. Yeah. And so it helped me because I never acted other than like me. But
yeah,
we are so grateful that you were here and shared your experience and your West Side upbringing.
Best side, right, Skills? The best side.
Nah, you know, outside. But thank you so much for being here. And please come back anytime. And we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Enjoyed talking to you. And I appreciate you staying up late.
Thank you very much.
All right,
I'm watching last season tonight.
It is. It's good. Check it out. It's good.
All right. I'm sure it is.
I'm going to look at the screen and be like, I know her.
Calm down, honey. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Bye, Karima.
Bye. Nice meeting you.
All right. Y'all calm down.
Sorry.
I'm fanning you.
I like her.
No kidding. Well, we appreciate her being here and sharing her experience. You know, I think one of my favorite parts of this show is talking to people in the business. Maybe not so much to find any gossip or negativity, just to, how'd you start so that these young people, if they watch, will understand how to make their dreams come true, because we all share that moment where we don't know how to get in this business. There's no on-ramp, you know?
Right.
And so it helps when people can share their experience rather than give advice to, oh, you got to go here to go there. But no, tell me what happened and might help somebody. Y'all saw Sinners, right?
We saw Sinners with you.
Yes, you did. We talked about this last week.
I don't remember.
I don't remember last week. But Sinners highlighted the blues. I mean, it takes place in the 1930s and highlights the blues. And so young people can sometimes think these are the beginnings, even though the film tried very hard to convey that it was not the beginning. We're at a moment in time, but I think as I was talking about a minute ago, the whole Chitlin circuit, minstrelsy continuum needs to be highlighted more and more than it is, because it is the foundation of purely American music and purely American entertainment. Supposedly, minstrelsy started show business. It is the foundation all our show business is built on. And the blues is the continuation of the rhythms and beats that were brought here by enslaved African people, and are now hip hop and gospel and R&B and rock and roll and everything else. And so the scene that got me the most in Sinners was the one that showed that history and future and present and what was then present spirit that carried through. What did the blues kind of stuff, did that have any impact to you? Skills is no longer...
I'm with you.
Well, are you going to answer?
You were so still, we thought you were frozen.
We did. We thought you was like, you know what it is.
You did that on purpose.
Is that a crack thing? Are you on crack?
No, this is a good strand I got tonight, Ma.
Oh, okay. But, we got to keep you off the good shit. We got to put you back on the ratchet shit.
I forgot the last part you were saying. You said, does what move me?
The blues.
Yeah, blues. Yeah. And
thank you for that in-depth analysis.
What? I didn't finish. I'm saying it moves me because it touches me. I can't explain like really how it touches me, but it moves me in a certain way, like I feel like I'm being comforted, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying?
Have you been to blues clubs?
I haven't been to actual blues club, no.
How did you grow up as my child and you've never been to a blues club?
Because it was not a full blues club, but they played, like I've been in many spots where they play blues. Wait, Ma, wait a minute. I could be wrong, you know what I'm saying? Because your definition, you old school, so blues, you know what I'm saying? I could have been in some blues spots, but didn't know.
What do they say? They got the blues. I got the blues. The blues and gospel and spirituals and old minstrel songs all carry us, you know, through to today and through other times. We can hear spirituals in the Funkadelic Swing Down Sweet Chariot Stop and Let Me Ride. That's an old spiritual. And Prince used religious themes in his music, like in The Ladder and other songs. Marvin Gaye combined them, the sacred and profane, in some very interesting ways that he, posthumously, they released a song called Sanctified Lady. Marvin had recorded it as Get Ready to Bleep Me, Sanctified Pussy. And if you listen to it, you can hear the original track that they tried to dub out. But that, like I said, that sacred and what do you call it? Earthly, you know, combination and contrast is in a lot of songs. And then our music, we also always had messages. We always, of course, Marvin Gaye's What's Going On still stands as a ultimate message song. But the blues also had a rebellious streak and a rebellious side. Muddy Waters recorded a song called Mannish Boy. And he says, I'm a M-A-N, no B-O-Y. Because he said, and I have the quote here, he said, and this is from Why I Sing the Blues. Waters had recently left the South for Chicago. Growing up in the South, Black Americans would never be referred to as a man, but as boy. In this context, the song is an assertion of Black manhood. And it gets lost, that message gets lost from people who just grooving on the beat and the repetition of it. But this is a not a protest song. This is an assertive song of Black masculinity. And B.B. King in the 60s sang Why I Sing the Blues. And he got a lot of guff from it from people who were upset that he was, again, Dylan, electrifying, and being pop. But he wasn't. It was still the blues. But he made it contemporary. Well, he had my favorite stanza in there. He said, I've laid in a ghetto flat, cold and numb. I've heard the rats tell the bed bugs to give the roaches some. And everybody wanna know why I sing the blues. And so the music has always had a message that goes from, again, back in the day when Black minstrels had to sneak in clever ways of asserting themselves. And so there were a lot of double entendres and double meaning things that they did. Well, I don't know, sir. But they were digging till today, where the young people put all their messages in their music. And it's a history that we need to preserve. And so Black museums, you know me, the Jim Crow Museum at Ferris State has a blues letter that I will make sure it's in the links. And there's another article that I found, Sinners and the South and the Price of Playing the Blues. Then there are lots of other articles and information that will trace the history of Black music from its roots to its future. And Afrofuturism is a big part of Black music. And again, is another offshoot of that same blues pipeline. And one of the interesting things I found about it is that, you know, that if we talk about the ghetto, the blues, boom, dunk, whatever. But as the migration takes place by train, you start to hear, and especially in Chicago blues, a lot more of that, I'm going to my phone, I'm going to get my girl. And that also you hear in Motown music. And so just to trace it that much. And I also saw another video where a young man was saying, we don't always appreciate the gay contribution to the blues, the Ma Rainey's, the Bogan, Louise Bogan. And their contribution to the musical hodgepodge. So, you know, we don't have all the answers. We are not teaching classes, but we do want to make people aware of stuff that they can then go on and research and study and find out more. Because there's a lot of history that we haven't been taught. And in the not teaching, they now want to erase what they ain't even been teaching. And so it's up to us to kind of keep the stories alive. So in these last few minutes, do you have anything you want to say, ask, talk about, proclaim, denounce? Okay, I'll take that as a no.
Well, no, I was just going to piggyback off of this, what you were saying about old people. I mean, y'all, well, you and bro, sis, since y'all the oldest ones on the left.
Get to the point.
We got to show y'all more love. You know what I'm saying? And I want to give y'all flowers tonight that y'all old, but I love y'all. You know what I'm saying? Thank I'm going to be though. Old one day, too. I'm not y'all age yet. But when I get there, I just want to be as happy as y'all is at y'all age.
Well, thank you so much. I know that gives me the strength to carry on through the night.
I was just about to say, I can go on now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
knowing that you're going to be there for us.
As long as I got my cane nearby, I think I can hang on it.
Yeah.
So, believe me, when y'all can't feed y'allself no more, I'm going to help. I will feed y'all.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
If you ever need,
put your shirt down. Put your shirt down. Put your shirt. Put your, how come you didn't go bald on your chest? That would have saved us that visual. Anyway, Stephen, where are you going to be
ma'am.
This week?
Oh, well, this is the exciting weekend. I'm going to be at Jimmy Kimmel's at 6 o'clock. And then right after that, I'll be at 9 o'clock. I'll be the main event against Joe Calise at the Wise Guys Arts District Comedy Club in Roastal Mania 6. I'll be the main event battling Joe Calise in a roast battle. And then right after that at 11:30, I'll be back at Jimmy Kimmel's at the late night show. So
lots of that's what day?
That is Saturday, May 24th.
All right, then, y'all mark your calendars and go see my oldest son. You're going to enjoy him. And then he'll be back producing this show. So, yeah. You know, be nice to him. Don't hurt him too bad. He's going to hurt you.
Come cheer for me.
Yes, and cheer for him and give him money because we all appreciate money.
Yes.
Skills, what you going to be doing this? What is that? What is that? Lotion?
What? You seeing things. Look. get his ass up. Famo, I mean, don't get his ass, but yeah, get whoop him, beat him. But Joe Calise,
you want me to get beat? Really?
No, want you to beat Joe Calise.
Oh,
I'm
okay,
saying
good.
For you, I'm telling you,
thank you.
I, my bad. Let me, I have to say it in Karen terms?
Yes,
say it in Caucasian.
I want you to win, you're a winner.
See, now
I get it.
Where are you going to be this weekend?
I'm going to be in my skin. When I jump out, you jump in. Okay.
You know, that line is as old as, older than me.
Oh, that's old. Look,
I'm going to spank you.
I will be this weekend.
You'll be in your room facing the wall.
I'll be at the Funny Bone in Cincinnati this weekend with Lunel, and then I'll be back this Sunday at Jimmy Kimmel's.
Okay, and your Friday night show?
Oh, it's postponed. It's postponed.
Okay, so you just Friday. Okay,
yes.
I was trying to congratulate you. You know, let's talk that up. Maybe you will get Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday.
Then you be the late night man. Go sit on the toilet. Anyway, I love you both. I thank you so much for being here and making this in another signature Midnight in the Marshaverse.
Yes. And comment, subscribe.
Yes.
And share.
And thank you for being here. We're going to have some words to live by. Go to bed. The last words to live by. And then we're going to ask you to come back and see us again next week. We're going to have a really good show next.
Yes.
We have a really good show tonight, too, but we're going to have a really good show. Anyway, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. And it's time for us all to say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, what up, Chuck of Luck? Yeah, all right now. Hey, this the old man on the porch just out here chilling a little bit, getting a little And, you know, even in the midst of all of the shenanigans that's jumping off, people are still trying to do nice things. I'm so glad about that. They put the little barcodes on the television screen so that people can donate and help people out in various situations. Just one thing I wish they would do. Let the barcode stay on there a little bit longer. Barcode, come on, I want to donate. First, I got to get my old ass up off the couch. Then I got to find my phone. Hey, baby, call my number. By the time all that happened, barcode gone. And I don't give a donation. I'm being deprived. Don't you be deprived. Help where you can, right? Yeah, it's the old man on the porch saying, God love you, be safe, and peace. Yeah.
Don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. Get down, she gets back.